Oh, yeah. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Chris Grota, along with
J.J. Hendricks.
And we're so grateful that you have joined us today here on Mornings for the Master right here on TGRN.org. And we've got a new listener today. We've got Wayne Charlton out in Mount Pleasant, Texas, out in Cookeville, sort of.
Hey, Wayne's listening. What's up, buddy?
And we're glad to have you with us today. This is one of the great online works of the Brotherhood, and we are so privileged to be a part of your week right here on TGRN.org. If you take just a few minutes and use your social media devices to promote the program, we'd like to have you announce it and let people know that you're listening to TGRN this morning, and tell them right here how to get to the Mornings for the Master right here on the live, and you can show them the on-demand as well on your on your tab there.
Well, we are for a special treat this morning as well. Chip Horton is with us in the studio, and love for Chip to tell us about the Rekindling the Fire workshop they got going.
Yeah, Chip, tell us about tomorrow.
Yeah, tell us about tomorrow,
Chip.
Tonight
and tomorrow.
Tonight and tomorrow.
Tonight at 7 o'clock, we got Michael Light coming in, and he's going to lead us in a discussion of lighting the fire. So he's going to start the rekindling tonight at 7 o'clock. It's got a youth emphasis, and so we're trying to get most of our youth to try to be here. And then afterwards is pizza. We're having pizza afterwards. So
pizza.
Got to be on board for that. And then tomorrow morning, early at 10 o'clock, come early, drink some coffee with us, get fired up, and get ready to start the day with Clay Bond. He's driving in a pretty good distance to be here with us. And certainly he's bringing his wife Carly with him, and she's going to be speaking to the ladies at 1 o'clock. But throughout the day, we're going to have men's and ladies' classes, a youth class that breaks out in the back, and they'll have the opportunity to listen to Sean Embry. He's driving up out of the Louisiana district down there.
Looking forward to that.
Marley, his wife, is going to be here, and so Mom, Melanie, and Dad Clint are excited about having them here. So it's going to be a big day. It's like a reunion for a lot of us. This is the fourth annual. So a lot going on, and we want to encourage everybody to try to be here. It is going to be streaming on the Gospel Radio Network.
But come if you can.
Yeah, we don't advertise that because we don't want anybody to say, well, I'll just stay home. But if you can't get out, if there is a situation, you know, where you're sick, you're unable to travel, et cetera, know that it will be here on the Gospel Radio Network live for you, and we'd be glad to have you either here live with us or on the radio listening in. But that's tonight at 7 as Michael Light leads us in a discussion on lighting the fire. And then tomorrow morning, starting at 10 a.m. with Clay Bond and ending at 3 o'clock in the afternoon with John McCormack, the preacher in the Atlanta Church of Christ. So try to be with us for that. We'd be glad to have you.
All right, we've got a couple questions for you, Chip. Two questions, actually.
Nothing with eschatology, I hope.
No, nothing with eschatology. Two questions. Out of all of the shows on the Gospel Radio Network, which is your favorite? And two, why is it me and Chris's show?
It's Rick Popejoy.
Oh, Rick Popejoy rocks.
12:30, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wednesday is one of my favorites. He talks to the kids on my school bus.
Oh, cool.
And so we have a good relationship going on there. But then Fridays, he has Omari French, and we don't even call it the Rick Popejoy Show anymore. On Fridays, it's the Omari French
Show. The Omari Hour.
Yeah, the Omari Hour.
I'm friends with him on Facebook. He is sharp.
San Francisco, man. He rocks the pulpit every Friday. He does a great job. And anyway, but
I'm hoping we can head down there for that workshop that they have coming up at Bryan College Station, the BCS.
Yeah. It doesn't have all the men that's going to speak on that.
Yeah, they don't have the list yet, but I know Omari French is coming in. And I've never got to meet him in person, but I've seen him wax theologic on Facebook, and he's a smart guy.
He's the man, that's for sure.
And, of course, we all love Rick Popejoy. So to know Rick Popejoy is to love Rick Popejoy.
Amen.
So, but I know we got that March 12th to the 19th, Quit You Like Men, the Young Men Development Conference. We got a couple of guys that might be going to that. So talk to Ben McCain and Sam Pace and the Gonzalez brothers, I think, are looking into going. And I wouldn't be surprised if Alex Miller made his way down there.
I hope so.
But that's going to be a real good deal at the Bryan College Station Church of Christ, BCS Church of Christ. If you'd like more information, check out bcschurchofchrist.com or give them a call, 979-744-7470. But that is the Quit You Like Men Young Men Development Conference. Rick Popejoy is putting that together, and a couple of the guys he's got coming are really solid. So
It's going to be a great time for all.
It'll be a great time.
Next on the list, we've got the first, the 51st annual lectureship there at the Memphis School of Preaching, March 26th to the 30th. The general theme is Build Your Hopes on Things Eternal. If you have not gone online to msop.org and downloaded a schedule, you'll want to do that and see the lineup from Sunday all the way to Thursday. There are women's classes, there's breakout classes, different treks that you can go on. And you've got people like David Sane, Barry Grider, B.J. Clark, Billy Bland, Wesley Simmons, Tyler Gilreath, Johnny Skaggs, Glenn Hitchcock, Larry Acuff, Glenn Colley, Dan Winkler, Dan Cates, you know, and more. Just so many different folks, and going to be it's a spiritually rich week. I've attended this lectureship before, and I always, always enjoy going.
It'd be fun to make a little hop, skip, and a jump over there one day.
I wish it was just like a hop, skip, and a jump, but it's a little more than
that. It's 5 hours from us, isn't it?
About five hours. Yeah.
And the last thing that we've got on our announcement sheet is the Saturday workshop for Bible class teachers at the Carriage Oaks Church of Christ. Tia McCorder and April Meacham are going to be holding that, and that is for ladies over at Carriage Oaks in Bossier City. They brought their bookstore to the BTSOP lectures a couple weeks ago. It is impressive. A lot of the stuff we've done at North Jefferson is based off of their workshop that they're going to be doing. So if you're in the Bossier City, Louisiana area, be a good deal to go to.
Well, appreciate all those wonderful things that are going on in our brotherhood. I hope that people are in a position where they can actually go to do that. It's hard to get away sometimes. You got local responsibilities, familial, mm-hmm. You know, job, and a lot of things that would keep you home. But if you can make it out to some of this stuff, just get your batteries recharged, it'd be a good deal.
Or rekindle your fire.
We definitely people within the driving distance of Mount Vernon need to be here tomorrow. It'd be a great thing. Mm-hmm. I say tomorrow, tonight too, if they can. Listen, we have got a chunk of scripture here. Exodus 15:22 begins. It's right after the song of Moses and Miriam. And the bitter water made sweet is where we're going to start today. So chapter 15 of Exodus, verse number 22, and we'll go to chapter 18, verse number 27. And let's look and glean what we can get from this wonderful text. So let's just dive in today and see what we got. Let's start unpacking this and sorting it all out.
Let's roll.
All right, what do we got?
Then Moses made Israel set out from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink the water of Marah because it was bitter. Therefore it was named Marah. And the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried to the Lord. And the Lord showed him a log, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. There the Lord made for them a statute and a rule, and there he tested them, saying, "If you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God, and do that which is right in his eyes, and give ear to his commandments, and keep his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord your healer." And then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they camped there by the water.
So I bet you that was a welcome sight mm-hmm. to get to a place, get to that oasis. Well, let's break that down. Verses 22 through verse 24, if you want to bracket that off, you could call that the problem. After traveling, 3 days without finding water, the people discover the oasis at Marah. But only to find out that it was undrinkable because it was so bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got a problem. Now, what do you have? What happens when you have a problem in the Lord?
You pray to God.
You go to God in prayer. But here's the thing. Verse number 25, the Lord tells Moses to throw a tree in the water and it will become clear and cold. Isn't that interesting? What an interesting thing. But let's not forget verse number 24, before they didn't go to God in prayer. They did not go to Moses. Moses didn't get to consult God right at first because they complained against Moses. Now, this is how they were wired. They were a bunch of mealy mouth. You know, mealy, is that complaining? You know, I just think about somebody who's always never happy, and this is their character. It's a character flaw, and every human being can be prone to complain, and so. This is a reminder for us to stop being complainers. We don't want to be like this. We don't want to be a complainer. We want to you know, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade type of people. We don't want to just be the complainers. But there was a solution, and the solution came from the Lord. And the Lord had showed him a piece of wood, and he threw it in the water, and the water became sweet. Well, that wasn't hard at all. I mean, there was no reason for the complaining, because there was God there to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what else do we have? Then we have a promise, verse 26.
We have a promise. I want us to put an emphasis on the word "if" here in verse 26. But then the Lord made for them a statute and a rule where he tested them, saying, "If you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God and do that which is right in his eyes and give ear to his commandments and keep his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord your healer." So basically, he put this on them to test them. If you will do what I say.
Yeah, it's conditional, isn't it?
It's conditional. It's a conditional covenant, much like we covered in Genesis chapter 12. Talking to Abraham, it was a conditional covenant. Abraham had to leave. And then God kept his promise, of which we're the beneficiaries even today.
I think that it's interesting that to notice that the nature of a covenant is always conditional. I mean, at least it appears to me that there's an agreement that has to be made here, but there's terms and conditions. I think that's an important point, because you get over to the New Testament, you want to start talking about the covenant that God makes with us as Christians. That's a conditional covenant as well.
Yeah, and there are people that will try to say that all we have to do is just have a happy thought, and God accepts us as we are. And God has never accepted people as they are. Never. I mean, even if that were the case, God did Cain wrong. If that was the case, God did Nadab and Abihu wrong.
You might come to God as you are, but you ain't going to stay as you are.
No. No. If you go to the Bible and you come away changed, that's the principle that we see so often. But here we see that he wanted to put something on them to see how they'd respond. And he knew how weak they were. They were just now coming out of slavery, and they're not settled, and God put something initial to start with, and this is what he started with them on.
Yeah.
So, verse 27, then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the water. And if you like numbers, 12 springs, 70 palm trees, 70 people came into the land of Egypt, 12 tribes of Israel. I don't know if that's really a tie-in, but I like numbers, so that's kind of fun.
Well, I haven't thought of the significance of that, I certainly see the
certainly
see the things that you're thinking of there. But if I could make some observations, just and we think about this chapter, a number of comparisons may be made between the Israelites' bondage and the deliverance, their deliverance and our deliverance and our bondage.
Mm-hmm.
And, Egypt was a type of sin. Let's say in typology, Egypt represents sin. Pharaoh, a type of the devil. The crossing of the Red Sea, a type of baptism. The destruction of the enemy is comparable to our destruction of the old man of sin. And you know, like Paul talks about in Romans chapter 6, but, Israel's complete victory and rejoicing are typical of our victory and rejoicing after baptism. And their problems, which is where the part that we get to in this section of Scripture, the problems that they faced and the temptations in the wilderness are typical of our problems and temptations while living the Christian life. There's a lot of parallelism here. And so his obedient children. You know, God richly rewarded the obedient children then, and so he richly rewards his obedient children today. Mm-hmm. As the obedient, the disobedience suffered the vengeance of God then, so do they now. So these are just some observations that we make of the text. I also see blessing. You know, God brought them to the next oasis, and, you know, they didn't have to throw a piece of wood in the water there.
Right. So we're going to start in chapter 16. They set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, or Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. And on the 15th day, on the second month, after they departed from the land of Egypt, and the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died in, by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out of, into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." So you consider this passage and how short their memories are. It's been not even 2 months where they were enslaved. They were brought harsh punishments and taskmasters. They had to go and get their own straw for their bricks. I mean, they had all of those different things. All you need to do is look at this past week's shows here on TGRN to see how bad they had it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes somebody gets somewhere. The example that I use, and a lot of people can relate to it, is, you know, you dated somebody for a while, and you finally had enough, and you break up with them. And there were reasons that you broke up with them. And then all of a sudden you get lonely. Maybe you hadn't dated anybody in a while, and you think back, you know, so-and-so really wasn't all that bad. You know, we had some pretty good times. You know, maybe I should give her a call. And what happens when you end up giving her a call and you spend some time with her? Oftentimes you remember exactly why you left or why you didn't date her in the long run.
People forget.
People forget, easily. And they like to romanticize the past. And some people even create their own history. And we find this happening is they look back and go, "Oh, when we ate meat to the full and had bread till we were about to pop." And it's like, no, you didn't. You were starving, and you were getting beaten and all of that. So they already have that which is going on. So we look in verse 4. Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I'm about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people should go out and gather a day's portion every day that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not." Again, we have another test. And what we end up seeing is this another little test.
Yeah.
As Ollie said, is if they will get the bread for that day. They just need to have faith that he is going to take care of them.
Well, here's something else that popped out at me, you know, back in verse 3. You know, you were talking about how they wish they'd had all the, you know, they were back in Egypt and had all the flesh pots. Let's think about it. You know, at the beginning in verse 3, they're thinking back to all that they had eaten in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
But it only serves as a motivation for them to wish they were dead. Because they're saying here, if only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread. Now, you know, I see them talking about the past in a romanticized way, but I also see them wishing they were dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Did God, you know, why didn't God just take us then? Why, that would have been better to die by the hand of the Lord than it would be to live out here in the wilderness and be tested. They were soft, weren't they?
Oh, they were real soft. But also, one thing to remember, the cloud of God was still with them in verse 3. They could still see the pillar of cloud during the day and the pillar of fire at night. They were still being led around. And even seeing that, they had this mentality. And people say today, "Well, if God had just show us a sign, then I would know." Well, that's not true, because these people saw the cloud. They knew it was God that was leading them around, and they still bellyached. I think a general consensus is people are going to bellyache.
You reckon?
I reckon.
Okay. Well, and so, you know, our faithful listeners, they're thinking, you know what? We don't want to be that way.
No, we don't want to be that way.
We're studying because we don't want to be that way.
We don't want to be that way. I'm just showing that.
I know. And it's such a motivation. because you've shown it, because it's right here, it's so sickening, we don't want to do it.
No,
and that's what, and that's what we're supposed to think. We're supposed to think, I don't want to be that way.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because you have many avowed atheists that will say, if I just saw something, I'd believe.
Yeah.
And say, no, you wouldn't.
Well, okay, the next part, in like if you look at verses number 4 through 6, and this kind of gets into the manna. This is where they're introduced to manna here. And manna doesn't just mean manna. Manna has another meaning. It's supposed to be a type of Christ. This is pointing forward to Jesus. You realize that there's some typology here. There's some messianic message in here for us. And I'm going to point out some of those things. Look at this. The Lord said to Moses, I am going to rain bread from heaven for you. Each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. Now, they weren't supposed to hoard it.
And we'll find out they aren't going to like it if they hoard it.
Yeah, it's going to be some bad stuff. There's terms and conditions on this blessing, okay? And in that way, I'm going to test them. And here, the test is whether or not they will follow my instruction or not. Well, you can't take more than what you need for the day. This is the test. All right? On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather as on other days. So, you know, day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, you get enough for the day. On day six, you gather enough for the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So you got to prepare for the Sabbath. So Moses and Aaron, this verse 6, so Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, in the evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaining against the Lord. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
In the evening you shall know that it was the Lord, because he's heard your complaining against the Lord. For what are we that you complain against us? What are you? You know, that's a good question. That's a self-reflective question, an introspective question. They're trying to get them to understand, why are you complaining against us? And Moses said, when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and your fill of bread in the morning, because the Lord has heard the complaining that you utter against him, what are we? He's doing good to us when we've been complaining against him. What are we? Your complaining is not against us. Ultimately, your complaining is against the Lord.
You know, we use that same principle.
Yeah.
Because we encourage people to evangelize. And sometimes if somebody's rejected in a rough manner, then it'll discourage them. And we have to say, they didn't reject you. They rejected God.
Yeah.
And I think that's a similar principle that we can find here.
Well, what does it go on to say?
Verse 9, then Moses said to Aaron, say to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling. And as soon as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the people of Israel, they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord said to Moses, I have heard the grumbling at the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God. Verse 13, in the evening quail came up and covered the camp, and the morning dew lay around the camp. And when the dew had gone up, there was on the face of the wilderness a fine flake-like thing, fine as frost on the ground. And when the people of Israel saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, it is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. That is what the Lord has commanded. Gather it, each one of you, as much as he can eat. You shall each take an omer, according to the number of the persons that each of you has in his tent. And the people of Israel did so. And they gathered some more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as he could eat. And Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it until morning. But they didn't listen to Moses. Some left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning they gathered it, each as much as he could eat. But when the sun grew hot, it melted.
Isn't that interesting? What an interesting thing. The literal definition of manna, the term, means what is it?
That's funny.
I mean, it's been compared to light bread. It's been compared to coriander seed. It's been compared to frost. I mean, it's light and fluffy, airy. It's been described, but you don't have a direct comparison. You only got some comparisons. You don't have an actual understanding of it. Mm. It's what is it? Let me throw something out, and you're going to see some as we read through the chapter. You're going to see some of the incidents. But if I was to give you an understanding of manna from the New Testament. Jesus has already done it from John chapter 6. People can read John 6, 49 through 51. Look, John 6, 31 and 49, manna was a physical, temporal blessing according to Jesus. All right? It was temporary. And John chapter 6, verse number 31, our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven. Now, Jesus describes the manna, and he quotes the Old Testament. He gave them bread from heaven. So that's bread from heaven. That's how that was. Now, is bread a figurative term for food, sustenance? Is it like regular bread? Probably not. You know, but that's the description that's there. All right. And then verse 49 says, "Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead." So this manna is referenced. So it's a temporal blessing. Our manna, listen, manna given by grace of God to Israel. John 6:31. Our fathers did eat that manna.
But we haven't got to verse 23 yet, but before I forget,
okay.
I've got a note that says, this implies that manna isn't natural and it's from God.
Right.
So,
all right, so it's physical. It was by the grace of God. It was a gift. It came from heaven. Exodus 16:31 says that, and we hadn't gotten there, but you say it was sweet. Exodus 16:31 says the house of Israel called it manna. It was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey.
Mm.
Yeah, that's like dessert. Mm-hmm. Why? How could you complain against that?
No kidding.
All right, so that's 16:31. Exodus 16:14, manna round showed completeness and perfection. Manna was given by promise, Exodus 16:4. Manna was to be gathered and prepared, Exodus 16:16-23. Manna was gathered, laid up, and not used. It would spoil. We already read that. You got the manna ceased when Israel reached Canaan, Exodus 16:35. Manna was limited to Israel. Nobody else had it. Only Israelites had manna. All right. Mm-hmm. Now let me give you the corresponding Jesus doctrine. Okay.
Okay.
Manna was physical, temporal blessing. Okay. Jesus is our spiritual blessing, but he's not temporal. He's eternal.
Right.
It's an eternal blessing.
Mm-hmm.
That's John 6:48-51. Remember that John 6 compares the manna to Jesus. All right. All right. Number two, manna was given by the grace of God to Israel. Well, in Hebrews 2:9 and John 3:16-17, Christ is given by the grace of God for all men. It's not just for the nation of Israel, it's for all men. So there's likenesses, but there's differences too. That's what typology is. Manna came from heaven. Well, Christ came from heaven. Manna was sweet as wafers made with honey. Well, you know what? Jesus offers a sweet life. In him, Christ gives us life at its best. John 6:35, John 10:10, 1 Peter 3:10-11-12. Okay, manna was round, it showed completeness. Well, you know, we're complete in Jesus Christ, are we not?
Mm-hmm.
Complete in Christ, Matthew 17:5, Colossians 2:10. And you are complete in him, right? Number six, manna was given by promise. Well, Christ was given by promise, according to Genesis 3:15, Jeremiah 31:22, Isaiah 7:14-53. All right. Manna was to be gathered and prepared. Well, Christ must be received through obedience. We've got to prepare for that. All right? Manna was gathered. Well, those who reject Christ will suffer a more severe punishment. John 10:24-31. You know, the manna had to be gathered. You couldn't lay it up. It would spoil. Well, you know, your relationship with Jesus can be spoiled if you don't take care of it. All right? Manna ceased when Israel reached Canaan. Well, Christ is for our everlasting good. He's for our everlasting good. It's not going to spoil. So in that way, it's a little bit different, or a lot different. Manna was limited to Israel. Christ, unlike manna for Israel, is for the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so just wanted to point that out, 1 John 4:14. And I just think, you know, when we go back, when we look down, just jump down to verse number 22 of the chapter, on the sixth day they gathered twice as much food, two omers apiece. When all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil, and all that is left over put aside to be kept until morning." So they put it aside until morning as Moses commanded them, and it did not become foul, and there were no worms in it. All right, because Moses said, "Eat it today, for tomorrow is a Sabbath for the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. Now 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, this is a Sabbath, there will be none." God's not going to send it, so you got to gather it up today for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. All right? That's the instruction. You know, there's only one day a week they can gather more than what they need for today, and that's when it's the day before the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting. Now, I realize that it's not a good idea to call Sunday the Christian Sabbath. It's not. That's not a good idea. But the principles do apply.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about it. It's a day that's reserved for the worship of God.
Absolutely.
And in this way, we need to do as the Israelites did in preparation for the Sabbath. We need to get our minds spiritually ready for the first day of the week worship of God. It is commonly understood that on the Sabbath was a day of reflection and rest and worship, and so we got to, you know, as they had to prepare for that, so we must also prepare for the worship of our God.
Mm-hmm.
But look on verse number 27.
All right, verse number 27. Back up here. On the seventh day, some of the people went out together, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you the bread. He gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each of you in his place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day." So the people rested on the seventh day. Now the house of Israel called its name Manna. It was like coriander seed, white, and the taste of it was like wafers with honey. Moses said, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Let an omer of it be kept throughout your generations, so that they may see the bread which I fed you in the wilderness when I brought you out of the land of Egypt." And Moses said to Aaron, "Take a jar and put an omer of manna in it, and place it before the Lord to be kept throughout your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron placed it before the testimony to be kept. The people of Israel ate the manna 40 years till they came to the habitable land. They ate the manna till they came to the border of the land of Canaan. And Omer is a tenth a part of an ephah." You know, it's interesting. Wasn't the, or I've got references here. I don't have references there. But, you know, we consider the, what he's saying about the manna, wasn't that one of the things that was put in the Ark of the Covenant?
Is
the
sure was.
Omer of manna, but also the staff that produced ripe almonds.
Sure enough, yeah. I think that's what this is. Didn't it say here in verse number 33, Moses said, "Aaron, take a jar and put an omer of manna in it to keep it, and place it before the Lord to be kept throughout your generations, as the Lord commanded Moses." So Aaron placed it before the covenant for safekeeping. The Israelites ate manna 40 days until they came to a habitable land. They ate manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan. Now that's project. Remember, this is a historical writing, so we're not doing it in order. Let me you know, I think that there was you know, some interest there in the manna, you know, being like Christ. We talked about the Sabbath for just a second. You know, it's the Sabbath is mentioned, or at least hinted at, in Genesis 2:2-3, but really until Exodus 20, where God gives the law of Moses, there's really no commandment yet, and so we're getting Exodus as a historical lesson, and so I think that, you know, it looks like they were learning about the Sabbath prior to the giving of the law, you know, that they were keeping the Sabbath and stuff like that. But I think you need to understand that that the Sabbath teaching was a doctrine for the Israelites. It was just like all other Old Testament laws. It was for the Jews, and so to take a doctrine like that and try to bring it over, and I think in typical fashion, it would correspond to our rest in heaven. I know some people today want to bind the law of Moses on people, and I always ask them. I said, "Well, do you keep the Sabbath?" And they said, "Well, I go to church on Sunday." I said, "No, I meant, do you keep the Sabbath?" And of course, they don't do that. All right, I'm not going to belabor that point because I want to get into chapter 17 because again, we get another reference to Jesus Christ here.
All right,
what is it? Let's talk about verse number 1 through 7.
All right. All the congregation of the people of Israel moved on from the wilderness of Sin by stages, according to the commandment of the Lord, and camped in Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" But the people thirsted there for water, and the people grumbled against Moses and said, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried to the Lord, "What shall I do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moses, "Pass on before the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you on the rock of Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water shall come out of it, and the people will drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because of the quarreling of the people of Israel, and because they tested the Lord by saying, "Is the Lord among us?"
All right, there's two things that are going to be struck in this chapter. Verses 1 through 7, the rock is struck open by Moses. The second thing that's going to be struck is the foe. The foe is going to be struck down by Moses. So Moses is going to strike two things, the rock and the foe. And verses 1 through 7, it says this at this place called Rephidim. The thirsty and rebellious Israelites threatened to kill Moses. This is the first death threat, isn't it?
I think so.
Man, I'm telling you what,
they
man.
Haven't been happy, but it's, I mean, we got to also remember, this is after they were given quail.
Yeah.
And after they've been given bread every day. And then they get a little bit thirsty and they're ready to kill him. I mean, it's just, remember, these are a very soft and weak people.
Well, let me give you the antitype. Type and antitype stuff here on Jesus Christ. All right. When you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 through, let's say, to verse number 4. "Moreover, brethren, I would not have you to be ignorant how that our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all did eat that same spiritual food, and all did drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." Now, it doesn't make any sense to talk about Jesus as a rock in the Old Testament unless you understand this rock that gave forth the water is typifying Jesus Christ. Now, he was with them in a spiritual way. It's not to say that he was that literal rock, but he did make it happen that when Moses struck it, that water came out of it. He did give him that power to do that. All right, so the rock is smitten in Exodus 17:5-7. Well, guess who else was smitten in the New Testament? Jesus Christ. That's right, Matthew 27:35-54. All right. "From the smitten rock flowed an abundant supply of water for all the Israelites." Well, from the smitten Christ flowed water of life for all people. John 4:13 through 14, John 6:35, Hebrews 2:9. Jesus invites people to come and partake of the water of life freely. Well, that's him, okay? All right, the rock stands forth with prominence. Well, Christ stands superior to all kings and angels in Hebrews chapter 1, Revelation 17, Revelation 19. So it's a huge, Jesus is a huge deal, just like this rock was huge. The rock had an unchanging stability. Well, Jesus Christ is unchanging, Hebrews 13:8. The rock was smitten in the presence of Israel. Well, Christ was smitten and suffered publicly as well, Matthew 27. He was on Calvary. That was on a hill in front of everybody, right? Just outside the gate. All right, Mark 15, Luke 23, John 19. there was no substitute for water to sustain life in that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
There was no substitute. It was that or nothing. Well, there's no substitute for Christ to receive salvation. It's only in Him.
Absolutely.
Matthew 17, verse 5, Galatians 1, 6 through 9, Acts 4, 12. No water flowed until the rock was smitten. It had to be smitten by Moses per God's instructions. And let me tell you, there's no actual forgiveness of sin until Christ was smitten. It was only promissory, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Hebrews 9, 15 through 17. All right, Israel had to drink the water to receive its benefits. All right? They were thirsty enough, they would drink it. Well, if we're thirsty enough, we must drink of Christ. We must obey Christ to be saved. Hebrews 5, 9. He became the author of eternal salvation unto all those that obey Him. So, in this way, Jesus is typified in this Old Testament rock that was smitten by Moses.
Mm-hmm.
But now tell us about the war, the battle here in that Amalek fights with Israel.
Yeah, what I want us to, before we read this, is to remember part of the Abrahamic promise was, I will bless those who bless you, and I'll curse those who
curse you.
So let's read this. Verse 8. Then Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. So Moses said to Joshua, choose for us men to go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses told him and fought with Amalek, while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. When Moses held up his hands, Israel prevailed, and whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands grew weary, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it, while Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on each side and the other on the other side, so his hands were steady going steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this as a memorial in the book, a book, and recite it in the ears of Joshua, and I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it, the Lord is my banner, saying, a hand upon the throne of the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. We look in verse 16 there, the reference of 1 Chronicles chapter 4 and verse 43. We see that Amalek is destroyed, completed under the reign of Hezekiah. So it took to the Chronicles, and Amalek is done away with. And
isn't that great?
So I like also verse 13, and Joshua overwhelmed Amalek with and his people with the sword. With the sword means it was a great slaughter.
Yeah.
So they slaughtered him. I mean, via the power of God.
Well, now, JJ, you know what I love about this? Not only do I see the victory, but I see that there was a direct connection to Aaron and her holding up the hands of Moses. When his arms and hands were up, they were prevailing. When his hands went down, they did not prevail. And so they figured it out that as long as we prop his hands up. Well, Moses' hands got tired.
Oh, yeah.
And so Aaron and Hur helped prop his hands up. And God set it up like that to teach us all a lesson, is that we have to help fight the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about what a great lesson this is for us in the church. Now, I think that, you know, we're fighting a spiritual battle here. And you've got preachers, you've got elders, you've got deacons, you've got basically your church leaders who are helping the flock fight the good fight of faith and lay hold on eternal life. I believe that we ought to hold up the hands of our leaders in the church and fight this battle together, stand on the same side and march forward. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't fight our own battles. I mean, just like you can't eat for me and I can't eat for you, we've got to bear our own swords. But, man, I'm going to tell you what, there's going to be some times where we get battle-weary and we're going to get tired, and we need the support of our brethren. And I'll tell you what else. I think of it in terms of when we have a Christian that has the courage enough to come forward to ask for the prayers of his brethren for spiritual struggles that he's facing, he is fighting a good fight of faith,
mm-hmm.
and he needs the support of his brethren. And I think in that instance, we can take a lesson from holding up each other's hands. And I think in a figurative way, this is to teach us a lesson that we need to to uphold the hands of our brethren to help them fight the good fight of faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're to bear one another's burdens, Galatians 6, 1 and 2, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Good lesson there.
Oh, man, it's a rich lesson. We look a little further to Jethro's advice, starting in chapter 18. Good father-in-law advice. Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel and his people, and how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. Now, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, had taken Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her home, along with her two sons. The name of one was Gershom, for he said, I have been a sojourner in the foreign land, and the name of the other son, Eleazar, for he had, the God of my father, was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness, where he had encamped at the mountain of God. Now, that's a good point to remember, is we were told that there would be sojourners that went with the Jews.
Right.
We knew that there were some Egyptians that saw the power of God and decided to leave with the Jews as well. So here we see Jethro coming over. Verse 6, and when he sent word to Moses, I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons with her. And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed down and kissed him. And they asked each other of their welfare and went into the tent. Then Moses told his father-in-law that what the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the hardship that had come upon them in that way, and how the Lord had delivered them. And Jethro rejoiced for all the good that the Lord had done to Israel, and that he had delivered them out of the hand of the Egyptians. So it makes you wonder, was Jethro just coming to see family? And then he hears what God has done and stays with them. Do you think that that could be a good example of evangelism?
I think so. And, you know, it is believed that this is the chapter that begins a series on the constitution of Israel, Moses and the law of God. This is kind of where it begins. And some commentators begin right here and say, okay, this is the beginning from chapter 18 through chapter 31. This is the requirements for fellowship, is how that's been categorized. And if you look at the statements that and the circumstances that precede the constitution that they're going to receive from God, you got this welcome, you got this wisdom, and you got the wonders of God. And I think what's happening is that Jethro, you know, is going to be part of God's people in this sense. Mm-hmm. I think there's this desire to be there. You're not going to be able to look at your son-in-law and fail to see all that he's accomplished. I mean, think about it. He's known him now, going into Egypt, seen and heard about what all has happened after they come out.
So he's now known him 40 years.
Yeah. So and remember all that time of the preparation of being out in the field. I mean, that was to help prepare Moses for this job.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting here thinking maybe he's seeing the work of God and hearing about the works of God. This is bolstering his faith. Where'd you stop reading?
Stop reading at verse number nine.
Well, let's pick it up in verse number 10. Jethro says, blessed be the Lord who has what?
Delivered
you from the Egyptians and from Pharaoh. Now, he knows. He is praising God for doing his work of deliverance on Moses and the people from that wicked Pharaoh. He knows about Pharaoh because he delivered the people from the Egyptians. Now, he says, now I know that the Lord is greater. This is verse number 11. He says, now I know. Now, this is good. You're talking about for evangelism. This is bolstering his faith, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. Now, I don't know what he knew before, but God has proved something to Jethro, that God is greater than all the gods because he has delivered the people from the Egyptians when they dwelt arrogantly with them.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and sacrifices to God. What did he just do?
He just became...
He just worshipped him.
He just worshipped him, yeah.
You know, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses, father-in-law, in the presence of God. Now, this is an act of fellowship, you know.
Mm-hmm. So,
what happens next?
Verse 13, the next day Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone stand around from morning till evening?" And Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, they come to me, and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws." And Moses' father-in-law said to him, "What you're doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for this is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. Now obey my voice. I will give you advice, and God will be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God, and you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws, and make them know the way in which they're to walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens, and let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. Mm-hmm. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will direct you, and you will be able to endure, and all the people also will go to their place in peace. Verse 24, I like. Yeah. So Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. So you want me to keep going?
Yeah. Here's the thing, and keep in mind, Jethro's not a Jew.
No. He's just not. Solid advice.
But there is a kinship, and there is a relationship, and as a non-Jew, he's worshiping the God who's made a covenant with the Jews. So I think that's very important to understand. He's one of those righteous. He'd be like one of those righteous Gentiles now at this point. But he's got some good advice that's going to help him. And what does it go on to say now?
You know, one point I'd like to make, looking at verse 24. So Moses listened. This shows Moses' humility. This is a good idea. It doesn't have to be my idea.
Yeah.
This is a good idea.
Well, it also shows that you can be a friend to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to. And I say that accommodatively speaking.
Yeah.
He didn't have to be a child of that covenant to be a supporter of that and be in sort of a relationship there. Okay?
Well, we see he worshipped earlier and God didn't get mad at him for it.
Right.
Verse 25, Moses chose able men out of all Israel, and made them heads over the people, chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And they judged the people at all times. Any hard case they brought to Moses, but any small matter they decided themselves. Then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went away to his own country. So imagine Jethro went back, and hopefully, he was still obedient, but the advice that he gave was a big deal to the success of Moses, because Moses was spending all day working with people who were fighting. If we were to make a comparison today, we could look at the eldership.
Mm-hmm.
If the eldership at a congregation spends all their time doing the physical work of the church, but not taking care of the spiritual, then they're going to be missing out. That's why we have deacons who are able to do that work.
Right.
So they've got to be able to give duties over.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's interesting. You know, the last couple of verses, you know, that he listened to his father-in-law, did all that he had said, chose men, appointed them heads over the people, officers over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and ten. I mean, that's a good organization. Getting that organized probably took some work too, but it was a good thing to do. And of course, you know, it just left the hard cases to bring to Moses to judge. But I think that just goes to show that as a people, you know, they're going to have issues, even though they're all the same people, they're all the same covenant people. They were all rescued together. They're having to live together. They're going to have issues with each other. And I think that just goes to show you that even in the body of Christ, the church, the local church, if you're going to get a bunch of people together, you're going to have some problems you're going to have to work through from time to time. And I think that those issues need to be worked out. And I think that's when Jesus says, well, you know, if you have a problem with your brother, you go to him and try to work it out yourself. If not, you know, take some witnesses with you. And if not, you know, we ought to have people in the church that would be good witnesses. people that would be good. You know, we're talking about, you know, oftentimes we just go to our leaders to help get involved in solving problems of differences between members in the body of Christ. I don't want non-Christians, though, that may be listening to this, to be scared of getting involved in the church simply because it's a group of sinners that have been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. You're going to have our problems.
Yeah, and that's the point we see here with God's people.
Exactly.
Even good people can have problems.
Well, and let's just put it this way. Listen, I think there's another principle here, and I think you've hit on it already, but I just want to reiterate that, you know, we often need help in finding the best way to get things done. Moses was wearing himself out as he tried to solve all the problems of all the people who asked him to help. I think there's a desire on our part to want to help people, but we can wear ourselves out, maybe to the neglect of our own spirituality, or, heaven forbid, to the neglect of our own families. And so Jethro, as an outsider, looks in and saw immediately that Moses himself had a problem. That is the problem of self-preservation. And when Moses considered Jethro's suggestion and found that it was wise, he put it to work. And so we're grateful to have been able to have this study today. JJ, closing thoughts.
Oh, man, a lot of good things that we learned here. The people didn't lean on God. We should. Moses took good advice, and we should take good advice, too. And we should be able to – there are a lot of applications. Yeah.
Well, listen, I really appreciate all that you put into the show today. I appreciate everybody listening today. We'll be back again next week, Lord willing, right here on Fridays, Mornings for the Master. Until then, we bid you Godspeed and God bless. Until then.
We're proud of you.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.